Well, I'm an architect by training with a master's degree in urban and regional planning and a PhD in public and international affairs from the University of Pittsburgh. And I have been involved in looking at money and the way money works for the last 30 years, parallel to my work as an ecological architect. And because I found out in 1982 to 4 in my job as the director of ecology and energy research in the International Building Exhibition in Berlin, that in the present money system, basically, ecological projects are not economical in quotation marks, because they can't usually compete with the money-making power of money on the money market. And when I understood that, I began to look more closely at the money system. I discovered this a flaw in the money system that would prevent us from implementing ecological projects on the scale necessary, and also cause a lot of social upheaval by redistributing money to from 90% of the population to 10%. At least this is Germany, very conservative figures. In most of the so-called developing countries, it's probably more 99% to 1%. I began to wonder whether I should actually continue working in ecological projects, or whether I shouldn't really devote my time more to the money issue. And I decided in 2002 to leave my job as a professor of architecture at the University of Hanover, and to devote my entire life and time to this problem. My first book, which was a very short book, Interest and Inflation-Free Money, in the meantime had been translated in 22 languages. The Chiemgauer, which is the regional currency, which is now the model for most of the German regional currencies, was very successful, and now serves, I don't know exactly how many thousand people, but it has over 700 to 800 shops that are accepting the Chiemgauer, and this is a region south of Munich. And it has really shown that people are ready to go for other types of money. Now, the purpose of a complementary currency like the regional currency can, in most instances, be to support a specific goal. And that is something that is totally new. Most people believe that the money system we have is the only one that is that can exist. It's a bit like asking the fish about water. The fish wouldn't be able to answer it, because there's always water around it. So it's the same with our money. We are using it from the start, when we are, from the age when we can go and get an ice cream, to our old age. And very few people understand that within the money system, there is this destructive construction mistake, you could say, which is interest. And because interest and compound interest always add up to exponential growth, and that over time is the invisible wrecking machine, as John King, an American economist, once called it. I think that's a very, very excellent description, the invisible wrecking machine. It always works in the short run. It may work in the medium term, when the interest is not too high. But in our country, where we have sort of, let's say, average interest payments of 8%, it takes about 40 to 60 years, and this is where we are now after World War II, 1945. Now we are about 60 years later, we are in the same predicament we had before World War II. Lots of people without jobs, huge government debts, I mean, with the euro, it looks as if the eurozone is breaking up, not only because of the interest mechanism at work, but also because of the differences in the economic quality or economic development of different countries. There are certain items in interest which are perfectly okay, like the work of the bank always has to be paid, a risk premium, which is an insurance. They are costs that would accrue even if you had a so-called interest-free system. But what is at stake is the liquidity premium, and that is what some people call interest only, but normally interest contains at least these four fractions: the work of the bank, the risk premium, the liquidity premium, and an inflationary adjustment. And if you don't have the liquidity premium, you can create a stable money system and you can do away with the inflationary adjustment, because, as you know, whenever you raise interest with a two-year distance, a two-year afterwards, inflation goes up or goes down if interest goes down. So interest actually sets the standard for inflation, not the other way around. Most people think because there is inflation, they also need at least interest. So it's if you could do away with the liquidity premium and the inflationary adjustment, your loans would become like a third. I mean, but between 2 and 3% at the most for loans. And that, again, would take all these costs out of the production. And it would, in Germany, you could say, normal people with a 30,000 euro income per year would pay 12,000 less for interest in all the prices. This is the big problem that very few people understand, that they only think that they pay interest when they borrow money in the bank. What they don't see is that there's an interest share in every price they pay, and which is quite obvious, because the person who produces the good or the service has to put into the price the interest they pay to the bank in order to do that. So on average, you pay in Germany 40% interest in all the prices. So you could either be almost twice as rich, or you could work part of the time only if you had no interest in the prices. And this is what I think is interesting in the whole discussion about money and interest, is that take out the interest, you get a much better deal for 90% of the people, who in fact don't understand that they're getting poorer all the time because of the interest payments, and that they get about half as much on average back in interest from their savings and from their life insurances as they pay through the prices. And then the last problem with interest is that it puts, because of the exponential growth with interest and compound interest, it puts an enormous growth pressure onto the economy, because you do not invest unless you get at least the interest back. So the interest sets the basic standard for any calculation in the, the Kapitalwert method. This is a method to calculate whether an investment is economical or not. And interest and compound interest the formula by which you work this out contains interest and compound interest, obviously. So this is the basic, the sort of empowering the invisible wrecking machine to always redistribute money from 90% of the people to 10%, and to make the economy grow at any price at all. So you can either choose between having a social or an environmental collapse. You can and at the moment this is basically the choice we have. Do we choose the environmental collapse? This is basically our choice most of the time, because this is what our children and the children of our children will have to pay, and not the people today. And all the politicians, this is a problem with our four-year election terms. All of our politicians know that if they would really tell the truth, they would be out of office tomorrow. For instance, if our finance minister says we want to reduce the government debt, which in all industrialized countries cannot be paid back, and most people know that. So they always promise to reduce the government debt. Now in Germany, since the inception of Germany, since the German Bundesrepublik came into being, every finance minister has promised to reduce the debt. None of them have really done it or have been able to do it. Because the other thing they would have to say, because this is only half of the truth, they would have to say we also have to reduce the assets, the monetary assets, because every part of the debt is being covered on the negative side by an asset that somebody holds. And that is so, if you only talk about reducing the debt, you're only telling people half the truth. And this is what we are facing all the way through the money system. We are facing half-truths, we are facing nebulous terms, like, for instance, the banks will tell you, let your money work for you. Well, has anybody ever seen money work? Money cannot work, it's only people and machines. Money can only be redistributed, and that's one of those fallacies that people are getting hooked on. I let my money work for me, so I don't have to work anymore. It doesn't work that way.
Let me ask you, how do you compare this interest with profit? What's the difference between
these two? Okay, what's the difference between interest and profit? Very simply, a profit, for instance, if you have a profit by building a house or making some clothes or food or whatever, there always is an upper limit. You see, the difference is there's exponential growth in the money system, which is the J curve, and there is, in nature, there's only a growth that stops at an optimal level. All of our bodies, trees, animals, everything in nature stops at an optimal level. And that would be achieved if we would reduce the interest, if we could do away with interest, and introduce a money system that would just be a mechanism for exchange of goods and services and not a means of speculation. Because once you have enough houses, you stop at an optimal level. I mean, it would enable the economy to stop growing at an optimal level, and that's what we need.
How would you stop a house builder?
You don't have to stop it. If there are enough houses for everybody, they won't be sold anymore. You know, if there will be enough shoes, enough clothes, enough everything, and we had, in order to service this exponential growth system, for instance, I once learned that if you produce stockings, you have a special work part before the stockings get sold, where they introduce a mistake, a fault in the socks, so that they get holes. So within a short time, you have to buy new socks. And this is the same with refrigerators. This is the same with a lot of products that are produced in the economy. We could have products, first of all, that would be produced forever. I mean, we could have cars and all this, and that could use a lot less energy and all this sort of thing, if we didn't have to follow the exponential growth in the money system, if we didn't have that growth pressure on us that is being produced through the money system.
Do you think there's a future for capitalism?
I think there is a future for the free market. I still think that the only mechanism which is going to help us find the right price for a product is the free market. But what we have right now is not, is a market that is governed by monopolies, and even we have a special institution that would prevent monopolies from happening, Kartellamt. They don't manage to do that. There's all the time other scandals about mainly about energy firms that produce electricity and so on. I really believe in the free market system being the most efficient way of allowing the right price to surface. What we now have is not a free market, mainly not in the money system. We have a monopoly of central banks. We don't have competing currencies. We don't have currencies without interest. So we have a few examples, however, that show that interest-free money can be very successful. Like, for instance, in Switzerland, we have a system called WIR, which comes from Wirtschaftsring, which was established in 1934, when we had the same problems we have today, just after Hitler came into power. And there, the people who, the businessmen, the small and medium-sized businessmen, got together and said, if we don't get loans by the bank, we are going to give loans to each other. So they created a parallel currency, which is now officially recognized in Switzerland by the central bank and by the government it's not an international currency, but it's a currency that is recognized internationally, which exists between 60,000 small and medium-sized businesses and within 15 regions in Switzerland, who can pay with WIR and get interest-free credit in WIR. And the problem for the people is that they can only spend it among the 60,000 businesses. It's a little bit like a barter system, except that most barter systems don't give credit and are not recognized parallel currencies. And they have a turnover volume of about 2 billion Swiss francs, which is WIR, 2 billion WIR, which equals the Swiss franc per year, and have a very good standing. And actually, that model could be a model for the whole of Europe, that business people just help themselves by creating cashless, systems that are not based on cash, but that are based on internet exchange of payments, and a little bit like the barter systems, but let's say with a more social intent. For instance, in Switzerland, the WIR bank does not accept big business into their system, because they say then they will rule us, and in this way we can make our own rules among the small and medium-sized businesses, and we have the advantages of a big business, but we are not big business. And so, for instance, Switzerland, you can almost pay in any restaurant with a WIR credit card, and they have a credit card which at the same time has the Swiss franc and the WIR on it. So the payment, so it's technically very easy to do. And this is being now tried out in various places in England. In the Brixton Pound, you can now use that regional currency and pay with your handy. With the new technology, everybody has a handy, so it can be a very easy way of transferring payments. And by using these systems more and more, we can reduce the use of the traditional national currencies and replace it by currencies that serve particular purposes. That's one of the big differences, and currencies that everybody profits from, because at the moment we have a system where only 10% profit from the system itself, and when we have systems that are doing away with the interest, we can design them in such a way that everybody who uses them profits from it.
Well, let me ask though, of the capitalists the people who are getting rich from the system today, every fiber of their body is oriented to making profit, to earning more money. How do you predict that we can convince them to be willing to give up this profit? Why would they be willing to stop?
Well, there is. I have talked to quite a few people in this category of 10%, and I can tell you that I think 99% of the last 10%, if they had a choice between further profit from the present system, and knowing that it will break down sooner or later, you just don't know when, and a system that is stable and where they would not gain more, but they would be able to keep what they have, they would always prefer to keep what they have, because they usually have much more than they actually need. And I know very few people who would not prefer a stable system where they don't profit anymore from a growing system where they don't know when it breaks down. And today I got a very good information. There is a so-called good bank in Germany, which has all the banking services. They have a absolute transparency on the internet of all the projects, everything they do. It's all in terms of it's ecologically sound, it's socially sound, etc. They have a growth since 2008. They have a growth of about 2,000 additional clients per month. So this is quite a bit. So it really shows that people who think about their money and what their money does, whether it is in line with their own priorities and so on, they now go to these banks. And we have four of them in Germany, but this bank I talked to today is by far the biggest.
Can you say the name?
Yeah, the GLS Bank. It's an anthroposophic bank which exists for quite a while, and they now are opening stores in every bigger city. They're just opening one in Frankfurt. They're already in Berlin, in Munich, and in Bochum, and other places. And there are other banks who are slowly growing too. There's an Umweltbank, an environmental bank, which has only 70,000, I think, clients right now. And there are two smaller good banks, as we call them. But they all have a growth of a number of clients and their turnover. Okay, if I go into history, I really have to also say that all the great religious leaders of all times have forbidden interest. And in Europe, for instance, Germany, there was a time when the people who had the right to coin the money, when they were not allowed to ask for interest. But so what they did is they created a money that had to be reminted every 3 to 4 years. And everybody had to bring the money to the mint sovereign and to get new money instead of the old money, and they usually lost something between 20% and 40% in the process. And that was at the same time a way to collect taxes. But this was the time between 900 and 1500 when all the big cathedrals in Germany or in Europe were built. That was a time when there were hardly any wars. This is why it hardly appears in our history books. And this was a time when we had incredible artistic knowledge, because if people cannot invest in money and get more out of money, they look for the nearest thing to money, something that either keeps its value or that even gets more valuable in the course of time, like works of art. They had beautifully furnished houses and so on. The church windows, I know, they were being built by people who had an apprenticeship of 7 years before they could do these wonderful church windows and so on. So there was a time when people started projects that they knew would take 200 years to finish. Imagine the kind of future trust in the future which these people must have had when they started these cathedrals. So I think that we really need to look at other ways of getting money to circulate, and instead of having a reminting of our money, we can have a small circulation fee, and that would do the trick in order to create a sustainable money system. Background: I have in my childhood, I went through World War. I was born just at the beginning of World War II, when Hitler came into power, and when in 1939 he was in power already, and he started World War II. I think a month later when I was born, and so I have been through war. I've been through hunger. I have been through the whole problem of rebuilding Germany. My father, who was lucky enough not to have to go to war, started in the basement of my grandparents' house, to where we fled from East Germany, because it was in West Germany. It was under the Americans at that time, American occupation. And so in the basement of my grandfather, they started repairing rubber tires from bicycles and rubber boots. And that was his whole profession was had to do with plastics and rubber and so on, and he produced conveyor belts during the war, and that's why he didn't have to go to the front. So after, I mean, in my whole life now, about 70 years of my life, I have seen everything from the really worst part of destruction to the very height of economic rich wealth in Germany. And I think that the way why Hitler was acceptable in Germany to most people was that he did something similar to what Roosevelt did, the new big New Deal, or the Great New Deal in the United States. He created jobs by creating public works programs and by paying people and by having much less unemployment. And so people would do anything to have work. And it's the same today. We are again in a situation where we have lots of people without jobs, and already the radical parties are starting to grow. The right-wing radicalism, like left-wing radicalism, is starting to grow because of the discontent of young people, just as in the 30s when Hitler came into power. So we are in the grave danger of having one of the three historic solutions that were resolving the interest problem, that few are getting richer and the mass are getting poorer, and the system breaking down. And the three solutions were either war, and that all World War One and Two both broke out when interest was down to 2.5%, and then you have hyperinflation, or you have a crash like in the Great Depression in the 1920s, or you have a social revolution. And neither with the French Revolution, nor the Russian Revolution, nor the Chinese Revolution, the money system was changed. So after 40 to 60 years, you have the same situation again. And therefore, I think we need to use our brains right now and start to look at the real causes of the present situation and try to get at that point. I think the major reason why this knowledge is not really public knowledge is that the economists are phrasing their knowledge in terms that nobody understands. But no, even more important is that in order to study economy or to start working in a bank, you have to accept the interest system. If you don't accept that, you might as well forget about studying economics or going to work in a bank. So all of our experts are actually intensely involved in keeping the interest system going, and on top of it, they make most of their money with the chaos they are creating. The more ups and downs, the more problems there are, the more they get, because they earn mostly from the fees they get for their transactions, and not even more than from interest. But the interest system causing the ups and downs, it causes a speculation, because as soon as the economy is not producing the values that the interest system demands in terms of money, then the money goes into speculative deals, like the speculation with currencies, which today, when you look at the total transactions, monetary transactions in the world, is 98% of all monetary transactions. With 2% of all those transactions, you can do everything in real terms, in real goods and services, including tourism, everything. So my goal was for the last 30 years to bring the knowledge about this flaw in the money system and what it does to us and the world to the normal people, to the 90% who pay in the system, because I think they are the only ones who are going to change it. And therefore I'm so happy about this Occupy Now movement all over the world, because it's the most interesting thing I find is that this money system, which oppresses the whole world is also the reason for a movement that is sort of capturing the young people all over the world. And it's a far better movement to go on the street rather than go to a radical party and get another fascist system going. And therefore, I have written a book now which summarizes my knowledge and my understanding of the last 30 years on 80 pages. And I have spent hours translating the right word, which would not be understandable for most people, into a sentence that everybody would understand.